This is How's It China with Cliff Central and China Plus. Download the podcast on the Cliff Central website, app, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. There are lots of people in the world who are curious about China. I didn't just bring that up out of the blue. It's something that's been on our minds for a long, long time. You know, there's this nascent world superpower that is right there for all of us to go and visit. It's there for all of us to learn a little bit more about. And most people think of China either in some very simplistic or stereotypical way, or they think of it as a place that's just too enormous and too overwhelming. We're going to try and do something that I don't know has been done before. We're going to try and give you a one-stop shop for learning more about China. We're going to talk about China's history in South Africa, the cuisine, the language, the opportunities for South Africans in China and for Chinese people in South Africa, and many other things. And we're calling it How's It China?
How's It?
Which I think is a nice combination of South Africa's sense of humor and the ability for us to integrate so much of what China already has to do with our lives. I mean, there probably isn't a day that goes by that you don't use a product that was made in China, that there isn't some connection to Chinese people and Chinese industry and art and history and culture. And we're going to talk to some people who've been in China. We're going to talk to people who've had experience there. And we hope to immerse you a little bit in the culture of China. Pumi Mashiko is a regular contributor to our show. And she's also someone who, like me, is fascinated by the country and wants to know more. So between Pumi and I, we're going to learn a whole lot more, and hopefully you're going to learn a whole lot more with us too. It's all part of what we're calling How's It China, and it starts today. So this morning, we've got someone called Bohlale in, and Bohlale has been in China. He's actually studied Mandarin. It's nice to have you here, man. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for having me.
What an absolute pleasure. So tell us a little bit about yourself before we get into your relationship with China and how you ended up going there and why you studied Mandarin.
Like,
and,
how does a nice Tswana guy like yourself end up happen? In China?
Yeah, so I was curious. I think that's the word I'd use as to how I ended up in China. Mm-hmm. And it really began with me learning Mandarin at Wits Language School.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so just casually tried to pick up Mandarin.
Well, it's not casual. I mean,
why? Was there like a Chinese chick that you were eyeing out?
No, hardly.
Why
hardly.
Do you want to learn the language?
Hardly. I mean, so I'm an economist, right? And you know, like, as you said earlier on, I mean, China is, you know, it's growing in size and influence in the world. So I wanted to go out there and see it for myself and experience it firsthand. You know, left here with my own stereotypes about what it is and how it'd be like. And, you know, and when I got there, I was absolutely blown away.
Wow. What is the most surprising thing when you first see China? Because, I mean, we see these incredible cityscapes and we see these incredible countryscapes. And, I mean, I've seen pictures. I've looked at them since I was a kid. Mm. Because China really is so many places rolled into one.
Sure.
There are parts of China that are so wild with forests and beautiful colors. There's those classical pictures we see of the wall, we see the ocean, we see the cities, like massive cities like Shanghai and Beijing, which are just extraordinary. Yeah. And then you've got a lot of other variation in between. There are vast areas of just like what we would call felt, you know, of kind of plains.
And desert as well.
And farms, right?
And just, snow.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Mountains
and snow. So if you were a South African who's used to seeing what we have around us all the time.
Sure.
What is the first impression you have? You get off that plane and I suppose you immediately see just these incredible buildings, right? Where did you land?
I think firstly you just see a whole lot of people, right?
Right.
So China's huge, right? I thought South Africa was big, but China's massive. Hmm. So you get to the airport and literally it's like, you know, a flood of people. They speak in Mandarin. You think you can speak Mandarin after a year spent at Wits Language School. You find out that actually you can't.
Is it because people speak very fast?
Surprise, surprise.
I think people speak very fast. There's different there's different dialects as well within the Mandarin language. Mm-hmm. And having not actually interacted with Chinese people whilst I was here, you know, I I just wasn't ready for what experience.
You were book smart, but you weren't street
yeah,
smart.
Yeah, I was book smart. So,
first of all, just say to Pumi and I, when you want to greet someone properly, how do you start?
I was hoping you guys wouldn't ask.
No,
me
come
this.
On, you can't be that rusty.
No, ni hao. I think
okay.
Is,
ni hao is just is to say hello.
Just hello.
All right. If you want to ask someone how they are,
ni zimayang.
Okay.
Yeah, ni zimayang. And then if you want to ask, I don't know. If you want to get somewhere,
yes,
you can say,
how do I go to?
Yeah, no, what's my chu, shima shima, you know,
okay,
or shang chu, Beijing, or shang chu, you know, then yeah,
so and I most can, importantly, so I can, how do I get to the ladies?
Well, if Buklale asks, how are you going to get to the ladies, he's going to end up in some trouble,
yeah. So that is my experience when I got to the airport. Very hard to navigate through the airport alone, right?
Because, yeah, but
sure.
But I mean, once she settled, and it took me some time to settle in China, I was there for 3 years.
3 years?
Yeah, I was there for 3 years.
You really get to know a place if you're there for 3 years.
Yeah, but I still feel like I haven't really, you know, got a grip of the place.
How much time did you have to actually travel around and figure out what country China is and what sort of places there are within that country that you might want to explore?
Sure. So I was fortunate because the course I was on, which is Mandarin for Business, they allowed us to, or they gave us an opportunity to like travel often and go to different places within China.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very cool. So I got to see different parts of China, developed China, developing China, the farms, the cities. You know, I went to Guangzhou, which is very popular with Africans.
Right.
That's the one place where you go to and literally feel almost at home.
Because why?
Why is that? What is it about?
Because there's so many Africans there, right?
Really?
There's so many Africans. And I think they are your traders. So they fly into China, buy a few things, go back home and sell them.
Uh-huh.
So that's why it's quite popular with traders and Africans as okay. well. So yeah, so traveled widely.
What's familiar? Like, what would you recognize in China that you would also get here?
McDonald's.
Okay.
Yeah, so actually, KFC, my first month in China, that's all I ate because that's the only thing I could.
You knew.
That's the only thing I knew
and, it had
and recognized. Yeah, I had pictures, right? And you know, I once walked into a restaurant, and the menu was completely in Chinese. Right, completely in Chinese.
Wow.
No pictures. And I'm starving and I'm thinking, I have no idea what I'm ordering here. And, you know, we couldn't understand each other, obviously, language barrier. So you end up just, you know, taking a guess, whoa, hoping for the best.
So at the language lab, when you were learning Mandarin,
mm-hmm,
you learned conversational Mandarin.
And writing.
Yeah, so
and reading as well.
Because like it's not like, you know, Chinese letters are... Yeah. Vastly yeah. different
you're not
to
using
English
the normal
letters.
Alphabet
so you can't
use.
Even figure it out.
Yeah, you can't even like no, you can't.
Okay, so you just ordered something and hope for the best.
Did you
and
just,
you hope for the best.
Did
and
did that point at something?
Did that change your habit of going to the same boring McDonald's all the time? Because then you were starting to try stuff, right?
So I started trying stuff. I'd peep at people who were sitting next to me, like, okay, I'll have whatever they're having.
Yeah,
you know?
Nice.
It looks nice, right? And you go with it, right? Like, you go with it, you find something you like, then you come back for that.
Uh-huh.
Then you become a bit more adventurous, you try something else. At the same time, you're getting better at the language. So now you know the chicken sign, the chicken character. Okay, that means chicken. Okay, it means beef. And you know, you...
Not to run into the stereotype of the black guy who wants to know the chicken sign. What?
So did you develop a real taste for some things?
So yes, I did. I enjoy jiaozi. Jiaozi, it's like my breakfast.
What is that?
It's like your stuffed... Like almost like stuffed buns. And how to explain?
Almost like dumplings.
Yeah, like dumplings. Yeah, dumplings.
Okay.
Yeah,
that sounds good.
Yeah,
that was your breakfast.
Yeah, it's like so. As my go-to breakfast.
Now that you're back here, do you miss those?
I do. I have my days, and it's so hard to find, right? And jiangbing as well.
What's jiangbing?
What's that?
It's also like a mixture of like eggs, and it's like a wrap.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, all very right. cool stuff.
So what did you? You said earlier that you go with a stereotype, with certain stereotypes in your mind.
Sure.
So what did you go there with and then find that, hey, ain't nothing like that here?
Yeah, so I thought I was going to a very disorganized type of place.
Chaotic.
Yeah, chaotic, right? Mm. And when I got there, like, I was just so amazed at how orderly, you know, parts of it are, how developed the place is. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there are parts of China I would flatter, you know, European countries or, you know, the US, just how developed, functioning, you know, their trains, their buses,
public transport must be something else. You're moving that many people around in a huge city like Beijing. Sure. It must be unbelievable.
I mean, my mornings going to work were so... Well, it's interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you have these like massive people all trying to get into this train in the morning, and you literally push and shove to get onto the train.
I want to ask you something that might be a little bit sensitive, but I think it's probably something a lot of people in South Africa would think. Are there a lot of black people in China? And do black people kind of stick out a little bit in China?
So I think I was, so in Beijing, not so, I mean, there are quite a few, a number of black people. There's embassies there as well. So there's generally like a lot of black people. What you find though is that when you go to tourist sites, like when you go to the Great Wall, for example, you'd find people from outside of the city, you know, also going to those places.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you get the stares and, you know, can't take a picture
with
you.
Do they want to touch you?
Yeah, they want to touch you and can't take a picture, you know. Wow. So yeah, that gave me a bit of insight in how it is, it feels like to be a celebrity.
Nice.
I'm not sure it's for me. But yeah, but definitely in the city, yes, you'll find a lot of black people. Outside, not so much. Literally, you find people who have never seen a black person before. Mm. You know, so it's almost shocking. So yeah,
it was an adventure, right? What was the most exciting part of your adventure there in three years? I mean, what sticks out to your mind that you kind of even now look back and chuckle about?
There's so many, but I'll pick one, right? So I think it was at the end of our semester, a friend of mine, also from SA, we went on a backpacking tour around China, right? And that's when you really discover the place, because you're living out from a bag, you're traveling in like trains, like very slow trains, where you're sitting on a seat for like 20 hours, you know, visiting the different, you know, historic sites. You know, we're speaking about Xi'an just now, which is, you know, very beautiful. They have the terracotta statues there, which is like a must-see place.
That's the tomb of the first emperor.
Yeah.
Emperor Qi. That is amazing. They haven't even excavated most of it.
Sure.
The part that they have opened up was discovered by accident. And this is the guy after whom China is named. I mean, it's the most incredible history. And they say that under that mountain, because he's buried under a mountain, there could be anything. There could be unbelievable treasures. And obviously they're taking their time to do it properly.
So that it doesn't cave in.
But it's
mind-blowing, right?
It is mind-blowing. It's just absolutely incredible. That's the part of Chinese history I'm most fascinated by.
Sure.
And obviously, during the stories and the various periods of Chinese history, there have been a lot of changes and political developments, and there's obviously a lot to see. How do you even begin to prioritize? Like, let's say I'm out there for a week. What would you say the things I should absolutely see?
So I guess it would depend, right? If you're more of a city type person, then obviously, you know, go to Shanghai. It's amazing. It's beautiful. They have this restaurant on the top of a top of this tower, right? It revolves around, and it's amazing views from there. Tianjin as well, also quite developed. So if that's your thing, like big cities, then, you know, I'd say Beijing, Shanghai, Tianjin, Xi'an as well, to some extent. But if you're more of the countryside type person, they have amazing rice fields that you should check out. I was in Suzhou for a bit as well. I stayed there for quite some time. It's coastal.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Very quiet, very chilled type place. So it's so different. There's just so much to China, right? There's just so many faces to China. So it would really just depend on the kind of traveler that you are.
And Botlale, tell me about South Africa and the amount of South African business that we do with China, and the amount of Chinese business that gets done here, and also how much interaction there is between the two countries.
Sure. So it's growing. It's massive already, but our economic trade with China is growing. And I was fortunate. So the company I worked for was a consulting company based in China. So we actually helped quite a number of companies who were trying to come to China and do business, or vice versa, Chinese companies trying to go to South Africa or Africa, right? So it's quite interesting. Mining companies, food and beverage companies also trying to get a foothold in China, because it's a massive market, right? It's a billion people. So as a company in SA looking to go to China, you're potentially tapping into a billion people market. It's massive. So I think there's opportunities there for people to venture out into China for business. I know for tourists as well. I mean, China right now is the largest tourism market, right?
That's right.
If you go to Paris, you know, they're everywhere, to a point where they've trained their sales staff in Paris to speak Mandarin, because that's a clientele, right?
Yeah.
You want to sell to them. You want to sell to them, and you want to speak to them in their
language. Well, this is the point. I mean, Chinese people are curious about the world, and the world is, I think, very interested in China, but most people just don't immediately think of it as a tourism destination.
Mm.
And we're going to talk in a moment to Jen Su, who's on the line, and she has spent an inordinate amount of time in China. You may know Jen Su from the show. She's been a regular contributor to cliffcentral.com. And before that, she was also our entertainment contributor. We've spoken to Jen, rather, about so many things before. And this morning, I want to talk to her about the amazing things that you can experience living in China, what she misses, what visitors to China should look out for and be aware of. We'll talk a bit about food, nightlife, markets, fashion, and customs. So hang on for all of that. Pumi Mashiko is with
ask,
me.
I have to ask this. Biggest learning. So you went there because you wanted to learn. You wanted to open up your mind, and because you wanted to bring it back home. What would you say is the one thing that's the biggest learning that you took from China that you brought back home with you?
I think just the entrepreneurial spirit and culture of the place, right? Like literally there's just so many entrepreneurs trying different things. And, you know, our view of China has always been copycat China, right? They just make fake stuff. And I admire that to some extent, because you're still trying to make a product.
I like to call it retro engineering.
You learn,
right?
Yeah.
So, you know, literally, if we were in China, there'd be a Cliff Central next door. They might call it Cliff with like one less F, you know?
Yeah, boy.
And, you know, that's just the extent at which they just go out there and do stuff.
And improve on things very often.
Sure.
You know, some of the more innovative and clever ideas that are going on at the moment, especially in technology, are coming from people who've figured out how to build it, how to build it the other way around, and how to add to it.
And I think now it's more of an innovative China. So I think they've gone through the copycat China phase.
Mm.
We're seeing, you know, Chinese products which are really great. I mean, Huawei, for example.
Massive business.
People don't even see it as a Chinese product. They don't make the connection that it's actually a Chinese product, because we're still stuck in that, you know, low quality idea of China. I think that's changed.
Yeah.
They're making cars now. They're building airplanes. Mm. So it's mind-blowing.
Well, Butlale, thank you very much for coming to share your story with us. Yeah, very cool to meet you. As I was saying, Pumi Mashiko is our co-host here on How's It China. We're going to figure out how much we do and don't know about China. Butlale, very nice to meet you.
Great.
I've got Jen Su on the line. Hey, Jen, how are you?
Hi, Gareth.
Nice to talk to you.
You
know I don't know how to respond, Jen, but I'll try.
I'm going to get you speaking Chinese soon.
Jen Su's been on the show so many times, but we've never actually spoken much about China. And you've spent a lot of time there. You obviously are linked to China. Both your parents are from there. You consider it to be one of the places in the world that you love to be in. You've just recently spent quite a bit of time in Shanghai, right?
That's right. I lived there, you know, for 4 years. I went there first when I was a young girl with my parents. My father was quite prominent in the medical field, and we were invited along with a delegation to visit. And that was just an eye-opening experience. And I was very fortunate that after living in South Africa, I also had a chance to go back and live in Shanghai. And my two sons went to school there. And we love China. This is an incredible, vibrant country, warm and welcoming. And it's fantastic. I mean, it's got the best food on the planet. Sorry, I'm a little biased, but
you're allowed to be.
But yeah, I mean, the cuisine is so varied. You know, anything from your Peking duck, which is Beijing Kaoya, which is like on another level in China, okay, to Sichuan, kind of this very spicy food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got hot pot, you've got Shandong, which is very fresh and salty with a lot of seafood dishes, Guangdong Cai, which is Cantonese food, you know, and sort of more sweet type of cuisine. There's I love the Chinese breakfast. Mm-hmm. And the Chinese breakfast has soybean milk. We call it doujiang. We have these deep fried dough sticks, youtiao. They call them oil sticks.
Yeah.
And they are so yummy. We dip them in the soybean milk. We have steamed buns with that. It's filled with sort of this, you know, hot steamy meat. And also my favorite is xiaolongbao, which are these little dragon dumplings.
Yeah.
They are these hot and juicy dumplings. And when you bite into them, they just squeeze out all the juice. And it's the most delicious thing. I really miss the breakfast in China, tell you.
You're making everybody very, very hungry here.
We can hear it in your voice. You can yes. actually taste the food.
So, Jen, tell me about life in China, because when you live there, it's very different to being a tourist. What is the nightlife like?
Oh, the nightlife is incredible, especially in Shanghai, where I was living. You know, it's vibrant. People are out at all times of night, and it's so safe walking around. I mean, I feel extremely safe there. One really important thing is that there is always surveillance there. You just feel a lot safer, you know. And I really enjoyed just experiencing everything that there is in Chinese culture, you know, rich in history for thousands of years, whether it's the music, the literature, martial arts, cuisine, visual arts, the architecture, the entrepreneurial spirit. There is so much to discover there. And when you were talking about the Great Wall, that's the other thing that's like beyond a belief, which is the number of places that you can discover in China. The Great Wall is a must see. You know, whether it's the Forbidden City, the Bund in Shanghai, the Temple of Heaven, the Pearl Tower, Yuyuan Gardens, the Suzhou Rock Gardens, the Terracotta Warriors in Xi'an, the Yangtze River, you can go through the Three Gorges, the Summer Palace, you know, West Lake in Hangzhou, the pandas in Chengdu. There's so much that you can really experience. And I would suggest that anyone, you know, if you're going to China to travel or even for work, you know, you're probably going to have to get away and go and travel a little bit, is do your research in advance, you know, because you want to make the best and the most of your time there. Definitely learn a little bit of Chinese. Mandarin, of course, is the most widely spoken. And you can get on the internet and download an app in your cell phone. I think the most important app you have to download is WeChat, which you were the one that really got going all over South Africa, Gareth, which I loved. And WeChat is the way that all Chinese communicate.
Right.
In China, that is probably the number one thing. So, you know, if you are going there, that's what you must have. And also what I love is that you don't even need to carry a wallet. Everybody uses, they scan their QR code. So it's WeChat Pay, you know, Alipay, we call it Zhifubao, you know, all kinds of different apps which you use by scanning QR codes to meet people, to pay for things. And
Jen, while we're talking
it's just
about,
very, very easy to get around.
While we're talking about paying for things, what kind of shopping? Because I know a lot of South Africans love to go overseas because they like to shop. Now, I imagine in China, there's plenty of stuff that we don't get here in South Africa, but they're also really interesting markets and shopping centers and places that you could go to. What kinds of stuff do you love to buy when you're there?
Well, I love to go to the markets, you know, whether it's in the evening or in the daytime markets. Mm-hmm. I especially love to go to buy fresh vegetables and fish in the morning. I loved actually going to the markets on my bike. Every day I would get my hair done for, it cost me 5 rand to get my hair done in the market. So whenever I'm at Fashion Week and I look like, you know, on Instagram, like I'm all coiffed and, you know, I have like perfect hairdo. It's actually cost 5 rand
in
the market. And then, yeah. And then I go and I buy fabric sometimes. I love to go and buy some of the arts and crafts, you know, and there's so many beautiful types of, you know, visual arts and crafts that are available. So you really have to go through the markets, I guess, and just experience it for yourself. There's tons of types of souvenirs
and fashion
and handicrafts.
What about fashion?
fashion is really out there. Now, I've just, you know, I'm in New York Fashion Week right now, and the number of Chinese designers is so impressive. They really, Alibaba sent the Tmall team to come out and do China Cool. So they've really, you know, been a very strong and important force in, you know, how fashion is being delivered. In fact, they have robotic, I guess, models even in one of the shows, walking down the catwalk, which I thought was pretty awesome. And you just really feel like things are moving at a fast pace in China. They're technologically very forward, very savvy. You know, you just feel like things are moving at a fast pace. And what I really like is, you know, people just, they respect your time. So if you're ever going, you know, for business meetings, always be on time. There's no Africa time in China, okay? You know, they're organized, they're efficient. If you think about like the 2008 Summer Olympic Games in Beijing, you know, when they had that opening ceremony, how detailed and organized and the depth of choreography. I mean, that's what China sets China apart from the rest. You see like the detail and attention to detail. That's really like what things are like everywhere there. My housekeeper, you know, everything was like in perfect order. Just, you know, people really take pride in their work and they're very detailed. When you go there, I also have a little suggestion, which is to make sure when to have a number of name cards. Now, with WeChat, you have a chance to scan your QR codes, and that's how we meet people and, you know, exchange information, keep contacts. But having a business card, and if you can do it in English and Chinese, that really would be the best. Mm-hmm. And when you present the card, you always present your name card to the other person with two hands. And then with the name, like Gareth Cliff, it would be facing them. Not upside down. And then when they receive the name card, they receive the name card with two hands. And the same goes with gifts. When you present gifts, you know, to people, and you should definitely bring some souvenirs. Bring little souvenirs from South Africa. I brought these sort of hand beaded South African bracelets that were made in the villages, and I brought them, you know, and I just put them in nice little gift bags and brought them to friends or people who I would meet in China, and they loved that. And they're always giving me little gifts. It's very much in the culture. So it's good to have something in exchange. It doesn't have to be very expensive, but something that has deep meaning. And when you present the gift, you also present it with two hands. And if they don't open the gift in front of you, don't be offended. That's Chinese custom as well. They normally will open the gift, you know, quietly away from sight. And that's a very different thing than, you know, the Western way of just opening the gift in front of somebody. So, you know,
Jane, one of the things that I'm very interested in with China is the art and decor, which is a very different aesthetic from what we're used to seeing in the Western side of the world. Are there any particularly exciting or interesting places that a person can go to see that, to see more of the Chinese art and decor? Like
definitely. I mean, the number of museums, you know, that have that. But also, I would suggest if you go to like the Suzhou Rock Gardens, there's a number of rock gardens there where you really see how they handle feng shui. Remember we talked about feng shui, which is the Chinese geomancy, and how that works. Everything, you know, is specifically organized and laid out, you know, in a specific plan that is going to be the most auspicious. You know, there are so many different principles in feng shui, whether it's in your home, removing clutter and, you know, having a clear path with a lot of air and light, which we call qi, you know, and that kind of thing. Those are all very important. But, you know, you'll see that wherever you go. It's sometimes it really jumps out at you and sometimes, you know, less so. But when you do go to the art museums, you can see, you know, the scroll paintings, the ancient Chinese paintings, but also going to the rock gardens, you know, going out to see all of the natural beauty and how they also work out feng shui.
Sounds fantastic.
And are there any things that people, you know, when you're traveling, you bring a part of what you've always known, like we shake hands, we, you know, are there any kind of things that South Africans take for granted that we do when meeting new people that in China could possibly be kind of misunderstood or taken the wrong way?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, when you talk about shaking hands, you do shake hands. However, we don't shake hands quite like the way the Westerners do. Like in America, they literally grab your hand and like almost rip it off there when they shake hands. When sometimes, you know, I meet people in, you know, in the West and they just grab me and start hugging and kissing me on the cheek. You know, that's not really the way that we would greet in China. People are more reserved. It doesn't mean that they're not friendly. They're incredibly friendly, but it's just a different way. You know, the Chinese culture, the Asian culture is much more reserved. We are, you know, we also have a lot of personal sort of space when taking photos. So when you're taking selfies with someone, don't just, you know, grab them and like,
you know, push your way into a picture with them. Absolutely.
You still have to be, you have to
respectable distance.
Yeah, right. But of course, you know, nowadays people are a lot more friendly in the sense that, you know, more open. And so all of that, you know, I think you just have to see the situation. But I really respect and I'm so happy that, you know, in China they still retain all those values of harmony, courtesy, honesty, loyalty, and filial piety, which, you know, is really lacking in the society that we know. And and I really hope that all of us can learn a lot from, you know, what Chinese culture can teach us.
Well, Jen, it's always a pleasure to speak to you, and it's really cool to speak to you about something that's so close to your heart.
Because, I agree.
You know, we've often spoken about entertainment and the rest of it, but to talk to you about China, which you have such a connection to, is really impressive. And I've got to say thank you very much for being part of our first episode of How's It China. And we thought we'd kick it off today with Jen Su and with Botlale Siacheng, who helped us to explore some of the experiences that you can have when you're in China, some of that immersion into Chinese culture and life and food and nightlife and all the rest of it. So thank you for joining us for the first episode of How's It China, a weekly segment we will bring to you focusing on China's history in South Africa, the cuisine, the language, the opportunities in China for South Africans, and the opportunities for China in South Africa, as well as many other interesting things. Join us every Tuesday while Pumi and I get to grips with all of this and so much more.
This is How's It China with Cliff Central and China Plus. Download the podcast on the Cliff Central website, app, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.